Excuse me. I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the Who Is call on the 23rd of January 2012. On the call today, we have Wilson Abigaba, Sindra Sukhanan, Avi Dorian, Michael Young, and Steve Metalis. We have apologies from Liz Gaster and Nafsika. And Wendy Zelter has warned that she will be 30 minutes late to join the call today. From staff, we have Barry Cobb and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. And Paul Vignal has just joined the call too. Thank you, and over to you.
Great. Thank you, Natalie. And Susan Prosser will be about 10-15 minutes late as well. So, Michael, this is Barry. I've got the agenda posted over to the right and action items. And like I mentioned, let's go ahead and just kick right off into the action items real quick, and we'll let Wilson provide us an update, if you don't mind.
Sounds good.
Well,
so,
Barry, stick now, or?
Yeah, we're go ahead.
Yes, so Wilson, there were two action items. Go ahead, Wilson.
Yeah, this is Wilson. I do not have much to update about. I want to complete the call, so I just wanted to, if there's anything commercial, I could attend to it in the first few minutes. Regarding my two action items, Number A was provide guidance on the survey question structure and form of the questions. That I prefer to defer that one until we've come out with most of the questions. Because most of the questions I see are the whereby respondents have to choose an option, and those are really the questions we want for analysis reasons. The only note I have to make is that we should avoid open-ended questions where people have to type unless there are other reasons, like for instance, the last item of other or even the other person. But open-ended questions are difficult to analyze, and that's the only comment I have. Otherwise, the rest of the questions are okay, whereby a respondent is required to choose any of the options. And we welcome any kind of questions whereby the respondent doesn't need to type. They can be multiple select or single select or even reads and any other types, as long as the respondent doesn't have to type on the keyboard. That's all. Then
okay.
For B, yeah, is that fine, Michael?
Well, just trying to understand that I understand you correctly, Wilson. Does that mean we lack the ability to take comment boxes or guided comments, like if people want a free-form text?
For the comment boxes, yes, they can be there, but they are not advisable. They are not advisable because it's difficult to analyze using a computer program to analyze the responses in comment boxes. That's the only reason why they're not advisable. Otherwise, they're able to handle them. But
okay,
we don't recommend them because what they analyze.
Well, Wilson, on the last call that you didn't attend because we really, it was far too late. We're going to see what we can do about that for you. But what we talked about was, can we afford not to allow people to do a little bit of free commentary? Would they feel that we're guiding them too much in the survey as to the questions and therefore the answers? But we also were really struggling with the thought of exactly what you're saying. How do we process preformed comments in any kind of meaningful way without creating a massive amount of work that goes beyond the scope of our group? And we thought, well, rather than necessarily process them per se, perhaps we could allow some preformed text, obviously avoiding it as much as possible, but we could allow some preformed text in some of the questions where it seems pretty appropriate to allow people to voice themselves, but also ask them to categorize, like give them categories that they can select along with the freeform text box to say, and we would create some categories such as, you know, this comment is a clarification, this comment raises, falls into the category of new ideas, or along those lines, so that we could just correlate, not necessarily not necessarily even comment in detail on the comments, but rather just present them in an order that people who want to dig into them in reviewing the report has the opportunity to look at that as maybe a sorted attachment of comments.
Yes, that's a good suggestion. And it is possible. Well, if I understood, to just repeat what you said, what I have understood clearly is that those free comment boxes, someone can have an option of classifying the his comment, like maybe this is any idea, or it's a complaint or something like that, to classify the comments in the where it is. That's very possible, and it would be helpful.
Okay, so could you look into the feasibility of that, and so that we have that as an option if we really feel strongly as a group we need to allow some freeform text on one or any of these questions? I mean, obviously we're going to try and avoid it, but if we feel it's necessary, then we have that structure in place to help, you know, manage the return comments.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, we can have that structure in place for the next call, which I think will be in the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
If I could get some sample questions for the, like, which fall under that category, it would be helpful. In this survey question so far, do we have a question that falls under that category already?
Okay. So if anyone on the call has a question amongst theirs that they feel really requires, allowing some freeform text, could you please forward it or identify it on the list? Wilson, I'll look for them as well. Between you and I and people self-identifying some of their questions, we'll see if we can pull some of them out of the list and try working with them with comment boxes.
Okay, sure. Okay, what I'll also try to do for the next call is that I will put all these survey questions that have been worked on so far in the tool, so that you can look at them when they're in the tool already.
Awesome. Okay, that was another thing I was going to ask you. So if you're prepared to do that, that would be fantastic. Do you have any thoughts on in the people working with you so far, do you guys have any thoughts on how, we should, is there a common structure we should try and put the questions into? They vary quite a bit right now, and I think we were all willing to try and rework our questions into kind of a common mechanism or methodology, you know, maybe like a priority ranking and answers. I did some of mine as multiple choice and some of them as the multiple choice just being yes, no, or indifferent. I don't know if you think it's feasible that they all follow the same type of mechanism, or if it would be even easier for you to go through and sort them into a common mechanism and work with the individual authors of the questions to sort them into a common mechanism. Now, I'm quite willing to help with that too. But what do you think would work the best?
I haven't gotten that question clearly. Could you please repeat it again, please?
Let me try and explain myself again. So there's different ways to format these survey questions, right? You could have a question and then four or five choices, right?
Yes.
The the answer could be, the question could be, how do you feel about structured queries and who is? Do you feel it's really important? On a scale of 1 to 5, mark how important you think it is to have this. That could be another way of formatting the questions and do a 1 to 5 scale, right?
Yes.
And there's a variety of different formats to the questions that all of us have come up with. So we're looking for your guidance as part of your working, your subgroup's mission is to kind of help us corral the rest of us into a common format, if applicable. Or maybe there's two or three types of questions we should all be trying to format our questions into. But we just don't want to have, I think, 15 or 20 different types of questions. Do you see what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, I get what you mean. We can, okay, I'm going to use these questions that will be there so far to come up with at least maybe at most four types of formats.
Perfect. Okay. And then we'll structure, if you give us the four, applicable formats, we can all go through the folks that have already generated questions or will be generating questions. We can all go back through our questions and make sure they fit one of the approved formats.
Okay, sure.
Okay?
Okay, sure. Yeah, I'll do that. Okay. And then, if that's concluded regarding that format, the second action item for me was to determine if the online tool will have capability to link to or mouse over comment for additional information as well, showing we need to understand the question. That is possible. That's possible. We shall do that.
Okay. Sorry, that was the pop-up.
Yeah, it will be a pop-up. If it's required when you hover on the question, then explanation will come, and then we can also put at the end of the question a small icon to show that you can hover on it or click on it to get more explanation.
That's great.
Okay. There was a suggestion of having footnotes to explain to explain more about the question, but I'll discourage that because these days people no longer pay attention to the footnotes . So it may be hard for people. But if the explanation is right there at the question itself, it will be easier for the respondents.
Great. Okay. That's very helpful. Does anyone have any comments I'm trying to represent what we talked about on the last call and run through it with Wilson, but feel free to jump in if I've missed anything or you want to add something. Okay. All right, so it seems like we're on track with that. Barry, do we have anything else for Wilson?
Nope, that's it for Wilson's assignment. And I can just start running through the other ones real quickly, and then we can jump right into the survey questionnaire.
Okay. And Wilson, I mean, if you want to hang in there for to go through the questions, that's great. If you're getting too tired and you want to exit out at that point, feel free. We don't want to have you staying up to all hours.
Okay, yeah, I'll stay on the call for about 30 more minutes and then leave the call. I'll be on the call for about 30 more minutes.
Okay. Perfect, thank you.
Great, thank you, Wilson. So this is Perry. Let's run through the rest of the action items real quick. The first one was assigned to me, and that was to request a public session for the Costa Rica meeting. The schedule that they have working now is strictly in draft form, but it looks like if we do choose to have a public session, it won't occur until Wednesday. I believe there were some conflicts with the Monday, given our regularly scheduled time. I'll keep trying to press for a Monday, but chances aren't looking too good right now, so I'll keep maintaining that. Secondly, from our last call, there was also discussion about trying to do a roadshow across the SOs and ACs. And I'm not sure if we want to do both a public session and the roadshows, but just to chat about it real quick, we do have a temporary placeholder for Saturday to give an update to the GNSO, but I'm still working on the other SOs and ACs about how that roadshow will work and working through those, so this one's still open. Any comments about our having a public session during the Costa Rica meeting? And I'll follow that up with, which is the next action item. I did send out a doodle to see who is attending Costa Rica and not, and right now we're at 5 and 4 with a few that didn't fill out the doodle. So we're about 50-50 almost.
Okay. Barry, just a question. I think I've got a conflict on the Saturday, and I won't be getting into the Costa Rica meeting till either Sunday night or Monday morning, I think. So in terms of giving an update to the GNSO, can I do that remotely?
I would. I think we do have remote participation set up, so I couldn't imagine it being a problem.
Right.
And if not, I can also try to lobby to get an update on Sunday if that'll make it easier. But I don't own the schedule, so I'll have to figure that out.
Yeah, either one will probably work. If I am scheduled to come in on Sunday, I can try playing around with my. I'm willing to come in a day early to try and make sure I'm there for the Sunday. You know, it's probably best or safest on the remote participation if we can do it that way.
Okay.
And I don't think this is a very controversial update or anything. Anyways, it's more just to probably more of a progress report than anything.
Very good. As far as the road shows to the other SOs, ACs, is that still something that the working group would like to have move forward as well, or do we just stick with our public scheduled meeting?
Barry, I'll throw my 2 cents in if anyone else wants to get in the queue as well. I'm concerned because I haven't seen a lot of feedback from the outreach side of things and the folks. I know Don has got some good resources on that now, but I'm just not sure that where we're at with that. And my own experience has been, when someone shows up in your constituency group and gives you a brief on something, that's probably the most effective way for you to understand it or to be aware of it. We really didn't have good attendance in the last public meeting we had. Maybe we would have better attendance if we had just issued a report, particularly if for some reason we had been a working group that issued a controversial report. It'd be different. But I don't think we fit into either of those categories. So I don't know that we're going to get much community outreach, feedback from that set of stakeholders we're trying to check back in with unless we go to them.
So this Barry, if I understood that correctly, then you're leaning more towards the roadshow and not so much the public session.
That's my opinion. I'd love to hear what other people think.
And this is Barry. I'll just also add, if we do maintain schedule, we can get a draft of our questions complete to send out. I think we did have the intent to also open up a public comment section to draw visibility to some of the survey questions as well. If we continue on the schedule we're at, we can make that public comment period. It'll be open before and during the Costa Rica show, and then then it would probably close shortly afterward.
Yeah, that would help, I think, get attendance or attention to it. If we can succeed with that, then yes. I think then we're probably okay with the public meeting schedule. I was going to bring this up in either new business or the agenda bashing side of things, but I just have confirmation back from Registry Stakeholders Group. I tried to book some time with them to clarify their comments on the original requirements report, make sure that we understand it and see if they feel that there should be any questions generated out of those comments. And they were quite responsive, so they've got me scheduled in on February 1st to have that conversation with them. Maybe we should just, you know, with Don's help and crew, I can't do all these meetings, but maybe if we could start to, you know, split up some of these meetings and ask for a bit of time in the various stakeholders and constituencies groups' regular scheduled calls, not try and, you know, plan to get it all done on that Tuesday. But, you know, starting now, just start rolling forward through them and making sure they understand what we're doing and what's coming and getting their feedback and making sure that they're aware, have their eyes open when the comment period opens. That could be effective.
That's very, very good. I'll keep this action item open. And like I said, I'll continue working with Liz to try to get figure out how we get that stuff scheduled for the other stakeholder groups, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, Steve, you guys in particular have a lot of experience with getting people's eyeballs on things. Do you think that is a fact? What do you think?
Well, this is Steve. I think the at least for our constituency, the time to get on the agenda is usually at an ICANN meeting is usually quite a bit of a premium. I think. Probably the best thing to do is for me to update my constituency, the intellectual property constituency, at our meeting prior to the Costa Rica meeting. We often have, well, it varies, attendance varies, but we often have more attendance on those calls than we do at the person meeting, at least of IPC members. So I think that would probably be more efficient than trying to get on the agenda in Costa Rica.
Okay. Well, that I agree. That's what I was thinking. So if we can, I guess, Barry, you know, there's, well, let me open up to the group. Steve, you volunteered for your constituency. If we can get people to step forward for groups that they're associated with, I'm already talking to the registry stakeholders group, so I can deal with them because I already have a meeting scheduled there. If we can systematically get people volunteering for the different groups, and maybe that's an action item for Don, Barry, to make sure that we have a volunteer for every group to talk about it, their regular scheduled calls, not wait for Costa Rica.
Okay, I'll put us both down. I'll kind of put together an assignment matrix so we can track that and send it
That's
out.
That's great. And, you know, I also volunteer to you know, I know the registrars quite well. Also, so I could brief them as well.
Okay, very good. Shall I move on to the next action item?
Yeah, please.
Okay, number two is complete. Like I said, that was the doodle for the Costa Rica meeting. Number three was to Susan to complete the survey respondent profile questions. That has been added to page one of our master list, so that's complete. The fourth one was for the entire working group, which is to search, collaborate, brainstorm for ideas on how to best handle comments within a survey. I think we just kind of talked through that a little bit with Wilson. And per what you had said, Michael, try to minimize where possible, but knowing that we do have them and then figuring out a way to include them as an attachment to the metrics of the survey so they can still be reviewed. So I'll go ahead and close that one out if that's acceptable.
I'm okay with that approach for everyone else. We do have an action item that we need to keep on there, Barry, to decide what the categories are that we're going to create around the comment boxes. So maybe that's something. Does anyone want to take that one?
Can I ask a question, Sabri?
Go right ahead.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean by categories around the boxes.
So Aubrey, what we were talking about earlier was trying to create some generic categories that people can self-select their comments into.
Oh, so if okay. I make, that's what we're calling categories, I see. Okay, so that thought has evolved. Okay.
Yeah, I mean...
I thought we were just using previous people's comments could be repeated by others. I didn't realize that we were predetermining a set of categories of possible extra comments. Okay.
Well, we're trying to get ahead of the curve, and you know, if we have to take some comments, we have to take some comments. But if we can get the people writing the comments to at least categorize them into some generic categories, we provide them, it helps us process them.
Well, okay, I suppose that's one way to do it. Yep.
I mean, I'm more than open to any better ideas, but right now that's all we seem to have on the table. So, if you come up with something, that would be great. You know, that and the strategy of trying to minimize open comments.
I guess my issue was just I don't see how categories is any different than the questions. And others, when somebody has a comment to make, they're saying that the straitjacket you've presented me as a set of questions does not fit. And what you're saying by having categories sounds like you're saying, and here's a couple other straitjackets that you can try on. See if it fits. But you'll still need an other because that won't fit. I think there's things that you can do after the text when you've got these collected texts. Yes, I know people just read them and doing that and doing a synthesis of them is difficult. But there's also these things do of lexical analysis of how often terms show up. One of the things we had talked about was if somebody presents a comment and someone else can see that, and we were keeping them short, we had also talked about the notion that a comment couldn't be any longer than a tweet or perhaps something shorter.
So yeah, I like that.
Somebody could say, and then you could see the comments other people had put in, and you would have the option to say, oh, yeah, that one. Or you'd have the ability to stick your own tweet-length comment in that then other people could see and pick on. So you'd have a self-generating list of things that are different that people could subscribe to or add their own. And then, as I say, there's a lot of after-textual, I mean, you know, that's what the whole web browser, et cetera, world is all about, is doing lexical analysis and finding categories. So,
right. Okay.
You know, that would just, I guess I'm looking at it backwards. Thanks.
No, I think that's actually quite brilliant. So what if we, so let's talk that through a bit more, that idea and that approach. So... One, we make the comment boxes relatively short. Two, we allow people to, I guess it may, and Wilson, I guess is the question whether or not we can show this, but if I'm filling out a new survey form and I go to fill out a comment box, I guess there should be some kind of link that or drop down that allows me to see other previous comments. So I could just, you know, select an existing comment that already basically says the point I wanted to make, and it simply, you know, does a plus one. You know, so another person supports an existing comment. Am I paraphrasing this right, Avery?
Yeah, no, that's the kind of, that's put more succinctly than my wandering around the bush with it. Thank you.
Okay, so I like that a lot, and that gives us actually what it is a self-ordering or self-alignment of people filling out the surveys. You know, one person already gets down what they want to say, you can get 20 more people basically joining that particular comment. So, Wilson, can you look into how we structure that or make the survey to actually do that?
Yes, we shall. Yeah, we shall look into that. It will be a preliminary view for at the next call in 2 weeks' time.
Okay, perfect. Great. All right, I like that much. I personally like that much better. So that's great. Anyone want to comment on that?
This is Cintra. I have my hand up.
Go ahead, Cintra.
Okay. I do feel that Avery's suggestion is quite worthwhile, but I see an issue as to how do we propagate the first set of comments. Is it something that we suggest? Is it, you know, how do you identify a unique comment then from a first set of comments or...
I don't think. We just display all the comments that were done if people want to pull a drop down. I think Avery's going to explain this. Go ahead, Avery.
Yeah, I was thinking before the first person makes an extra comment, the list is empty. It just says enter your comment. And as other comments are added, the last entry remains enter your own comment, but you see these others in the back and the drop down before it. So, yeah, first person taking the thing. And it's quite possible that you'd go through all the way through on a set of questions where no one would have anything extra to say, that the questions covered it all, they found the right answer there, there was no need for them, and so that question may indeed have no extra comment. But there could be others where what we came up with didn't fit for the people at all and they had other things to say, but they might be self-selecting into groups that... while the ones we put there didn't fit, the first guy that came along that said, this is absurd, you should be talking about Y instead of X, and everybody else that comes along says, yeah, then we know that that was a significant comment.
Okay. One other question. Sorry.
Central, was that clear?
Yes, it's clear, but I just want to just go forward one more step with that. How do we know, is this an anonymous survey?
Right.
Yes, right? So...
yeah, I think we determined that people can either be anonymous or if they want to post who they are, they have the option to.
Okay. So may I also suggest that where people do post that they're anonymous, that they... be given the option as well at what stakeholder group they belong to?
Well, we have, I haven't been through Susan's, starter questions or baseline questions yet, so I was thinking that would be where that would be, right?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay.
Great.
Any other comments on Central? Your virtual hand's still up.
I will take it down. Thank you.
Any other questions on that one? Okay, back to you, Barry.
Great. I'll remodify that one, but keep the category the conversation we just had open. So basically, the last two action items, the number five, which is really ongoing till we get the survey complete, and that's just for the owners of their requirements questions to update and revise and submit so that we can continually evolve the draft. And then the last one was me to just send out the next version of the draft as we get closer to the next call. So that takes care of all the action items. And really number two for the agenda. And I think we've also covered number three on the agenda. So back to you, Michael.
Great. So let's get into going through the new questions. Unless anyone, we kind of jumped through agenda bashing. So I just want to turn it back and see if anyone wanted to add anything to this list or just wait till new business. Okay, then let's get into the questions. So, Barry, I guess we start with Susan's profile questions.
Correct.
Susan, can you walk us through the questions and your thinking behind them? If you're talking, Susan, you're muted.
I see her logged into Adobe Connect, but I don't think she's dialed in just yet.
Okay. Maybe we should put something in the chat window to grab her attention.
Well, she did say she was running late on a call, so we can maybe just come back to the profile section and to start with question one.
Okay.
Which starts on page 2 of the document.
Didn't we discuss this last time?
Yeah, we discussed these ones last time.
Okay. Question 2 then?
Yeah, R2. So the first question for this is just a baseline question. Is there an appetite for a standardized query structure? So that's very straightforward. The second one is to try and qualify the build on that and qualify the answer. And I provided some examples of a benefit for people to select from. We could also have a comment box, and this one would probably be appropriate because people might feel there's a strong benefit that's not in the list. Question 3 was actually an attempt to make people pick, because question 2 allows you to select multiple items, and then question 3 was to say, well, okay, if you had to pick just one of these, which is the one that's the most important, which if we get enough survey respondents, will give us a nice statistical curve to let us know where people are focusing on amongst the areas of benefit for standardized query structures. And then in 4, I try to, without being too technical in the question, I try to basically do it effectively as a technical question that less technical people can understand. So emphasizing that they can identify IDN registrations when they query an RDDS server by doing so in PUNY code, which is in ASCII. Beyond that is native multiple language support important to you. So, you know, what that's masking is a much more technical question, basically to say, do you want a query structure that allows you to input in Unicode and other such technical elements. But I don't think we need to dig into the depths. I know I'm not the only technical person on this call, but I don't think we need to dig into any deeper than that for this audience. If we see that there, and maybe we should have a comment box on this one, so that they can actually put some thoughts down on what they exactly need. Then I try to reach into some stuff that's raised in the application guidebook. I guess we can't call it the DAG anymore because it's not a draft anymore. But there's you know, a lot of focus on searchable whois, which I guess now is searchable RDDS, which means the ability to search on attributes or linked data elements. And I used an example in this question so people understood. Try and get a sense. In combination with the profile answers that we get on people, and we can see who's actually, you know, what kind of group that they're from or what kind of stakeholder interest they might represent, their answer to this will be kind of interesting in combination with who we think they are, even if it's anonymous. Because, you know, we can anticipate that certain stakeholder groups really don't have much of a use for for searching on attributes like a street name or postal code, whereas others very well may have a great deal of use for it. So, you know, for example, if you're trying to correlate, you know, you see a phishing domain or something, and you're trying to correlate similarities with registrations associated with whoever made that phishing registration in the first place. So in domain abuse control, this could be a really interesting tool, and I'm sure the IP and the legal communities in general are very interested in those features, as well as you know, law enforcement agencies. And I'm sticking very deliberately to the beneficial use with this question because I don't want to get into sounding like, you know, we're judging, you know, the value proposition of whether or not people, I don't want to say whether or not someone who's doing, you know, marketing, ultimately, I don't want to challenge whether that's right or wrong. I don't want to challenge whether it's right or wrong for law enforcement to have access to things on a premium basis. I'm trying to avoid in these questions that type of opening that can of worms, basically. So I don't think that's our job to. And I think that's all the R2 questions I generated. Barry, anyone have any questions? Oh, I see Steve's hand up. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. This is Steve Metalitz. I agree with you on your last point, by the way, that we should steer clear of. I had two comments on these. One is that I appreciate that you tried not to keep these as untechnical as possible, but I think they're still way too technical. You can go through them and kind of dumb them down.
Okay.
You know, for example, RDDS should be spelled out.
Okay.
And the last question, I don't understand it, certainly, and I think we need to just,
okay.
Kind of, you know, we could take a little time to actually explain these questions. I don't think there's, you know, we have some restrictions on the length of the answers and that type of thing, but the questions could be a little bit longer than they, than, you know, in order to explain what we're asking about.
Okay, so I'll take I'll take another shot at rewriting them to make them even simpler.
And my other observation was on question five. Does this overlap with one that Susan did? I think it's under R5, where she asks about do you need to search WHOIS records by data elements other than domain name, and that includes, you know, contact. I'm just not sure if this is – are you asking something different there, or are you asking – does this kind of overlap with the question she's already put in there?
In some cases, these are going to overlap a little bit. My question is from the perspective of structuring the query versus, you know, whether or not you feel the data is valuable or something.
Okay, why would you want to structure the query that way if you didn't think the data was valuable?
No, I mean the actual construct of structuring the data. So this set of questions or this section R2 is really really for a technical audience. So it's for operations folks basically that have to generate automated queries against port 43, and they don't want to have a different query structure for, you know, 50 different WHOIS implementations.
Okay. Well,
it happens to cross over other areas that, you know, other areas actually talk about the WHOIS response being a similar structure or not, right?
Well, so some of it does. Let's see here. And maybe her question is out of place. Let's see. It's do you need to search WHOIS records by data elements other than domain name? So that's a search. That's a query, right?
Right. I'm not talking about whether or not you need to search it, whether or not the – if you are going to search it, is it valuable to have a standardized structure for the query?
Yeah, I understand that. But then your last question is asking about whether that standardized structure should include the ability to search on attributes such as street name or postal code, right?
Yeah, so basically maybe I need to just emphasize that a little bit more and say, you know, assuming that there will be searchable WHOIS, would you feel it's valuable to standardize the queries for such functions, such as searching on postal code or searching against street name?
Yeah, that might be better to distinguish it from the other question. That might be.
Okay, I will tweak that then. Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Avery, I have a quick point, and it's more on a issue about duplicate questions than about the particulars of the question. And basically, I would argue for not avoiding the duplicate question. I think there's a lot of information that one can get from knowing that there are questions that are duplicate, except maybe for the context they're situated in, and taking a look at how those answers come out. That also has value in understanding what's going on. So, I mean, sometimes in putting together a survey, you intentionally put in duplicates of the same question with perhaps slightly different wording or context to sort of pull out all sorts of, you know, outliers and just understanding of what's going on at various points in the of the survey, similar to a testing situation. So I would argue that if there's a good reason for a duplicate, let's be aware of it, but not necessarily remove it.
Yeah, no, I think that's very valid. It'd be very interesting to see, Avery, if, you know, in context one, someone says a yes, and in context two, basically to a similar or overlapping question, they say a no.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm going to make a suggestion then to support that thought. Let's not, at this stage of the survey effort, let's not squash what looks like overlapping questions just yet. If they require clarification, like the one Steve just helped me with, I'll make it more clear. But let's assume that overlapping or similar questions are okay for the time being, until we get all our questions generated into a reasonable satisfaction otherwise. And then let's look at the ones, let's identify the ones that we think are overlap or are copies, and talk through them as a group of questions and see what strategy we can arrive at around them and see what benefit we could get out of them. That make sense, that strategy?
Yeah, this is Steve Metallis. I'm okay deferring on that till we have all the questions and then looking at all the duplications.
But we should flag them. Like, anytime we see something that we think is a duplicate question, we should just mark it, Barry, as duplicate. Possible duplicate. And then we'll go back to them at the end then. Okay. Cintra, I think you're up next. R3.
Hi, thank you. This is Cintra. Okay, so Steph is going to help me with going through the documents, right? I'm just going to look at it on Word. Is this easier for me? Right. Okay. So let's go through R3. R3 is for defining a standard data structure for WHOIS responses. The data structure would contain uniquely identify the data elements and must be returned in a manner that assures there is no ambiguity across elements, correct syntax, and correct semantics. So my questions are, one, do you support a standard, formal, extensible data structure in the schema for WHOIS responses? This is yes, no. Secondly, should the data structure allow for interpretation of outputs of WHOIS responses to non-English and not Latin languages? And this is also yes, no. Now, I don't know if this is entirely clear, the way I've put it here, that... it could be for interpretation as well as output, or if I should split that. But I wasn't sure about that one.
Yeah, Cintra, it's Michael. I think 2-1's a really good question. I think it's, and I understand it, I think, as, you know, Steve pointed out, I'm not sure. So let me interpret the way I understand the question. Are you basically saying, based on either where the client's coming from, the response gives a different language answer potentially?
Yes, or allows for interpretation in a different language.
Okay. So I don't think most people would understand that. You might have to be more of an example.
Right. Okay. So for instance, I can set that I'm querying the WHOIS in a particular language, and, you know, it's like saying on a website that I want to see French. or I want to see Chinese. You know, should we build that into the system, or should I ask, you know, would you like us to build that into the system, or would you like the system to try to interpret what language you would want?
I think it's a really interesting question. And I think, yes, you should build that. Personally, I think, yes, you should build it into the questions. I just think you need to maybe make
separate
it its own question.
Yeah, because it's two things. I mean, first of all, we're dealing with something that is for human interaction and then also to be machine parsed. So I'll try to separate this a bit and you know, just allow for a system that can be built really for more human and user interaction rather than just machine possible. So I think, too, I will need to do some more work to split that up. Because
okay.
It's not just, I think I'm mixing the two things a bit, interpretation as well as output. We should be separate.
Right?
So,
Cintra, I see Steve's got his hand up. Maybe, Steve, you want to go ahead?
Sorry, Steve, please.
That's okay, thank you. On this question, too, I guess I had two questions. One is, Cintra, as you describe it, is that really a query function, or is that an attribute of, would this extend to querying, making a query in different languages or different scripts? And if so, does that belong back in the previous section? That's one point. And the other is, I think there is an overlap here with questions with R7. It's really what the Internationalized Registry, the IRD working group, has been kind of struggling with for many months. So, again, I'll just flag it as a potential overlap or duplication. But I think it's a very good question, and if it can be drawn out into simple questions, I think that would be very useful.
Okay.
But again, it might partly belong in R2 as well as in R3.
Okay. All right. So what I'll do is I'll speak to Michael a bit later about this question specifically, because I do have to speak to him on 8.2. So if he's handling R2, is he? Yeah. Okay. So should I just move on with my questions then?
Yeah, keep going.
8.11. Okay. So I say if yes, right? Should this interpretation or output of WHO's responses be based on localization of the client software? Yes. No. Now. I don't know if I should go further to ask about privacy or that kind of thing. I don't know if there's any suggestion coming out of this call as to, you know, if that was the recommendation of the working group in the PDF document, but I don't know if there are any alternatives that we want to suggest here instead of just...
I think the privacy stuff is covered in other sections.
Okay.
So I think you're okay there.
All right, fine. Then it goes to 2.1.1. If no, please recommend with reasons another more suitable mechanism for this interpretation or output of WHO's responses. And this is an open answer, and definitely we can use Arbery's suggestion that, you know, there's a mechanism for just adding one to previous recommendations.
Okay.
Three, should the data structure be flexible for humans to interpret? Yes, no. Four, should the data structure be flexible for programs to parse? Yes, no.
So three, you mean human readable, and four, you mean machine readable.
Right.
Okay.
So what I will do is I will split up two, as just like how I've split up three and four.
Okay.
5, should the data structure be XML-based? Yes, no. If no, please recommend with reasons another suitable data structure. And this as well is an open answer.
Yeah, I think you have to have that open. People may have an opinion there.
Right. Okay. Are there any other thoughts, any other questions that anyone else can think of that should fall under the set? Nope.
No, other than the stuff around 2, it's pretty clear to me. I don't see anyone else's hand up, but does anyone have any other comments? Okay. So let's go into the next section. I don't know if Barry's back at his computer yet or not.
The next section is R4, and that's my section as well.
Okay. You know what, folks, I don't know if anyone else can scroll this Adobe screen because I don't seem to be able to.
Natalie, who's also a host, should be able to press the sync button.
Okay.
I'll be back in just a second.
I can scroll down if you just tell me when to stop.
Okay.
There we go.
That's fine. Yeah. So this section is a lot shorter than the last, and it's because I didn't know how deeply we'd want to go into the actual processes and that sort of thing in terms of receiving error messages and handling error exceptions and that sort of thing. So I'm guided by the group. R4 deals with the definition of a set of standardized error messages and standard handling of error conditions. Examples for error messages include queries exceeding the limits, no records found, unable to process query, etc. So my questions are, 1, do you support standardized error messages for the WHOIS system? Yes, no. 2, do you support standardized handling of error conditions within the WHOIS system? Yes, no. The third one is, please detail the most common error conditions within the WHOIS system. And I did miss a little bit there where I should have said where you would expect or where you would like to see standardized error messages. Sorry, standardized error messages for. So this is an open answer. I don't know.
I agree.
Any questions on this point?
Yeah. Cintra, it's Michael. I agree with your adjustment to 3. It's just got to emphasize most common error conditions that you would like to report on within the WHOIS system. Because I can tell you, for example, some systems with the rate limiting are very deliberately designed not to give a specific indication that you're being rate limited. In fact, how they'll do the rate limiting is just hold the connection responses back for a longer period of time than you would normally expect, even though it's still a valid session, and basically sleep you, if you will, and they don't necessarily want to say anything because they don't want to make it easy for people to understand algorithmically how the rate limiting is actually being triggered so that they can sidestep it. So I think that clarification about, you know, error conditions that you want to report on is important.
Okay. Thanks, Michael. Is there any other questions or comments or any additions? Because I do find it's a bit sparse. And I do think that maybe, I don't know if we should go so far as to start going into these examples of error messages and, you know, generating questions on the survey with regard to that, you know, to find out, you know, how useful it might be. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I have to take a look at the section and give you, from my perspective, what do other people think? Okay. No other opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cintra, I guess, you know, this is a tough one because you could delve into great detail if you open that can of worms. So I'll tell you what, I mean, I'll volunteer to take a look at the section with you and see if
thanks
if
very much.
Yeah, if there's any other obvious questions that jump out at me.
Okay, I really appreciate that, Michael. And if there are any other comments on these two sections, please feel free to let me know on the mailing list. And that's it for me for now. Thank you.
Barry, want to go to the next section?
I think the last meeting we had reviewed through Susan's, and then she provided updates from the prior version. She's still not on the call.
Why don't we do this with Susan's stuff, because these are rephrased, and then we have the intro baseline questions. Why don't we ask people to put their comments to the list on the revised R5 and also the profile baseline, and make that an action item for all of us before the next call? And that will keep our time rolling here.
Hey, this is Avery. I didn't do any of my homework on this stuff, so it is as it was last time. I thought about pop-ups and things like that, but I didn't think about this stuff. I kept meaning to, but never did, so there's no change. I haven't taken any of the notes or anything into account. I'm still curious. It looks like, at least I'm hoping, that we will be able to have scale 1 to 5 questions as one of our 4 flavors. And so I'll continue working on these with the assumption that a 1 to 5 scaled question is okay.
I think that's a safe assumption.
Okay. And I will really try to get to it this week. I just didn't get to it.
I was working on mine this morning, Avery, so
right.
I totally understand.
I planned to, but then a couple other things came through, and it was time for this meeting.
Well, you know what? It won't stop me from badgering everybody to get their work done, but I do sympathize. We are all struggling with the changes going on in the industry right now. It's made it very busy.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Steve, you had a very interesting email. If you could walk through your stuff and explain it to us, that would be great.
I think Steve had to drop off the line. Yes, he's disconnected now, and he said that he'll try to join again before the bottom of the hour.
Okay, so you know what? If we get him back on, we don't, but let's just tag an action item for people to, again, comment on the list on his additions, specifically Barry. And if he joins us, then that's great. Otherwise, we have it as an action item. I want to try and use people's time as efficiently as possible.
Okay, the same, I think, applies to R8.1. This is what was provided by Stephen, and we reviewed through on the last call. And I think he had some revisions that he was going to do, but we don't have those yet.
Okay. Well, he happens to be in my neck of the woods, Barry, and I'm going to run into him actually in person tomorrow, so I will hammer him to get those revisions in. Okay. Cintra, you and I were going to talk some about this after the call, but I did throw some questions in for today, just to get it going. And this is really about, this is a very interesting, contentious area. So I tried to phrase the questions to separate the, whether it's right or wrong to require, to have different levels, different permission levels and different access to who is data. And talk more about the mechanisms of it. So in question one, I tried to word it that way, basically saying, assuming the features are configurable and not mandatory, do we believe a standardized permissions framework will be valuable? And the data, and I tried to separate the idea of the data elements being tied to different permission levels, user permission levels. So, okay, so I tried to keep this just simple, and maybe I need to add more of an example to make it understandable. But the answer is, you know, really clearly, you either care, you don't, or you haven't even thought about it. It doesn't matter to you. Q2, is a more specific question around this, and that is, I think there's more than one way to apply this, but people assume, I think sometimes when we talk about permitted access to a Whois system, people kind of assume that means that the people with the logins are going to be known. So, and people are worried about privacy of on the client side, you know, Whois, people believe that they have a right to check Whois data without necessarily having to identify themselves. And so this question is trying to make people think about the fact that you can have a Whois service that requires everybody to have a login, and yet they can still be anonymous. And so it's kind of a roundabout question to educate and ask people, you know, now that you understand that you can maintain your anonymity, do you have a problem with having to, expect people to use a login? Because it can be very operationally useful for people to manage Whois services. And in this respect, you know, I'm thinking about rate limiting in IPv6. And I won't get into all those technical details, but right now, rate limiting is really focused on IP addresses and source IP addresses, and that becomes much more challenging with IPv6. So this is another way to focus it on people's user identifications. So that's why I asked the question. And I left it as a comment box because more technical people and operationally focused people may have a lot to say about this. It's useful. Okay, and so jumping down to Q3. Scale question, 1 to 5. However, you'll like that. So where do they feel this kind of whole feature set is on their radar? Is it a really important one, or is it down the scale? And then I thought it'd be interesting to ask people whether or not this, because I've heard a lot of, I sit in other forums and listen to a lot of people that are trying to operate Whois services in various ccTLDs and so forth, and I've heard a lot of discussion about privacy and data issues and stuff in regards to local law. Not that I am a lawyer or anything, but, you know, I'm listening to a lot of lawyers talk about this lately, and it seems to me it'd be, question 4 was a nice one just to ask people to get a sense of, is this an absolute requirement for some Whois operators because of local law? And that was it. I came up for those sections. Any comment?
Michael, this is Barry. Something that popped off the top of my head, but probably goes more down the policy. Would it benefit to have an open comment box here so that whoever that user is, they could list their jurisdiction?
That'd be a good one. Yeah, I think so. Let's put a comment box and say, additional comments, or please list your jurisdiction. That'd be really good. Actually, what'd be ideal is if we could have a drop-down bar for people to identify their jurisdictions. So then we can actually calculate it. It's almost, or maybe we should be capturing that in Susan's questions. You know what, Barry, that's probably better to capture that in the baseline question.
Yeah, I'll make a note of that.
Okay. All right. Do we have any other new question sections with people that are on the call? We didn't get Steve back yet. We have Wendy on and off for a bit there.
Yeah.
Can people? Sorry, Barry. Next. Yeah, she did. So let's do this. Next time we go through the questions and we have new additions, let's please do a little round circle and see who's got to drop off first. And rather than going through them like top to bottom like we did, let's just go through them in order of when people have to leave the call. Because we've lost Steve, Wendy, and Paul. So, all right. I guess for the remainder of these questions, Barry, we're just going to ask that. Can you flag them specifically and put an all call out to the list to ask people to comment on them on the list?
I will. I'll list which ones we didn't get to review through today. Which will probably be more than what we did, but I think we're just about complete with at least the first draft of each one.
Steve, yeah, we're making really good progress here.
Yeah, Steve did a good example for R11, and then I believe you had mentioned you're getting with the registries tomorrow or sometime this week regarding these last few comments.
Feb 1st.
So, good.
Okay. All right. So, do you want to run through the action items so that we finish up on time and let people go?
Very good. The first action item I have is to send out another doodle to maybe review a time change. And like I said, Mike, I'll get with you offline about that before I send out the doodle. The second action item is still figuring out how we're going to do the road shows with the SOs and ACs. I did just send a message canceling the Wednesday public session. And Glenn was going to, she responded back and said she'll help me out with trying to get on some of the agendas. And I think also we're going to try to look at also building a matrix of all the stakeholders and constituencies and trying to work through our representatives with each of their respective groups as well to provide an update. The third action is kind of general and open for everybody with a specific one assigned to Wilson with respect to how we categorize comment boxes, for lack of a better word, some of the elements to that would be a combination of a lexical analysis, short comment boxes, and then the specific assignment to Wilson to see if we have the ability to see other comments submitted in a drop-down box.
And Barry, specifically, not just see the other comments, but, if I like comment third one down from the top, I can indicate that. So now, there's two votes for comment number three.
Okay, very good. And then the fourth one will be open to everybody, and that's to review through the requirement questions that we didn't cover on the call today. But really, it'll pretty much be a review of the entire questionnaire now that we've got just about every section filled. The fifth action item will be to add a jurisdiction in the profile section of the survey at the top. And then just a reminder that when we, in our next session, when we go to review through these questions, we'll call for an order on who must drop first and then review those questions accordingly.
Okay, great. Does anyone have anything else? Going to new business? One more time. Okay, I hear nothing. So let's wrap up the call. Thank you, everyone, once again, for your time, effort, and energy, particularly in this busy time. It's fabulous that we have this incredible knowledge set that people are willing to bring forward and contribute toward the Internet community. And for myself, you know, this is a real passion for me to straighten out Next Generation Who Is, or RGDS now. And, you know, I really appreciate everyone's hard work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Kelly. You may now stop the recording.